Chattanooga. My name is Jamie, and this is Coming Home Alone. With me, as always, my dog, Pup. Always a good boy. Pup, looking extra handsome today. I don't know what it is, but you got that swagger. People still say swagger. I think they still say it. In fact, I know that there is a Old Spice deodorant called Swagger. I don't know if anyone uses it, but it definitely exists. And so does Swagger. If you weren't sure, just go out to the club. See these fly mother you-knows owning the damn room. Owning the damn club with their charisma. Anyway, I don't know what I'm talking about. Episode 9, feeling fine, and I'm feeling great, just so you know. Partially because you may or may not have noticed that we didn't have a show last week. That's because it was Memorial Day weekend. It's a long weekend. I try to have a show every week, but, you know, I was just enjoying the long weekend, enjoying some time off, and just soaking up some relaxation. Hopefully you were, too. Got a great show for you tonight from Brandon K. Wood Photography. We have photographer Brandon K. Wood. Coincidentally enough, K. Wood is an old friend of mine from high school. Now a nationally recognized, maybe even worldly recognized photographer, but we'll get into that. Good for him, for sure. So definitely stick around for that. We also have another tale of a scenic city loner coming up as well, and that'll be in a second. So every week I get the download numbers in for the show. I can check them anytime I want, but that weekly email that I get just kind of, it sets a nice pace. Instead of having to sift through the daily downloads and stuff like that, I kind of like just get in a big chunk and see what I did from the last week to this week. And we doubled our listening downloads, so that's crazy. And it's especially crazy because, again, we didn't even have a show last week. So y'all are just listening to the old stuff. I have to apologize. I haven't even brought this up, but I am really trying to fix. I don't know why my RSS feed is not putting out the earlier episodes like 1 through 4. For some reason, it's just not sending out to iTunes and Pocket Cast and all the other venues that I have set up. So I'm trying to get that fixed. This podcast thing is relatively new to me. I'm still figuring it out, working out the bugs. So I've got technical support on it, hopefully, and we'll get that fixed as soon as possible. Because it's really important to listen to those old episodes. I hate that you can't listen to them. You know, I get messages and emails all the time asking me where the first episodes are. And it sucks that you can't listen to them because this is a journey. So it really is kind of important to hear that journey. And not to say you can't go back and listen to other episodes and stuff like that, but, you know, just to kind of follow it along, that was the plan from the beginning. So we're working on that. Hopefully that'll be resolved very, very soon. I thought it was, but it wasn't. So still working on it. But I want to take a minute out to thank y'all for listening to the show. And, you know, it's growing. It takes time to grow these things, especially when you have like zero base. So the fact that it's growing and getting popular and people seem to like it a lot means a lot to me. So thank you, because I really do appreciate y'all listening. I'm getting too sappy. Damn it. Why am I getting too sappy? I'm scared, Pop. Hey, buddy. That's okay. You can go back and do your own thing. I'll call you if I need you, all right? And I actually had something great to talk about tonight. I was driving down the road earlier, and it came to my head. Like, oh, that'd be cool to talk about. But I can't for the life of me remember what it is. You know, typically, I'll just pull out my phone and record the memo or whatever. But I didn't do that because I was sure I was going to remember it because it was that great of thing to talk about. I was like, oh, great. You know, because sometimes I run out of things to discuss. Again, I talked about guy rompers the last episode. I don't give a shit about that stuff. I'm talking about it because I see other people talking about it. I don't know if anyone's talking about this, but if they weren't, they need to be. But alas, I can't remember. So let's just get into it, man. Let's get this ball rolling with another edition of Tales of a Scenic City Loner. Oh, yeah. And, of course, this is our nightlife segment. Again, every week, and I say every week, but I'm looking in the future, in the next few weeks, to maybe add some more segments, some different segments, and switch it up. so it may not be every week. And maybe we don't even have an interview every week. We'll see. But I want to try some different things. I'm not exactly 100% sure what those things are at the moment. But I know people like this segment. And I like it too. This was like the basis of what this podcast is about. But I may or may not do it every week from here on out. Which maybe will make it more special when I do it. Or maybe I will do it every week. Maybe I just decide I like doing it and I will. And point is, expect some new things in the future. Which may take the place of this from an episode or two. I don't know. We'll see. But the rules to Tales of a Scenic City Loner are, as you probably know, is that every week I go, or whenever I do it, I go out to a new place in Chattanooga or the surrounding area. I go by myself, I don't tell anyone where I'm going, I don't bring any money, and I don't bring a cell phone. Now, I do bring a cover, if there is a cover charge, and I actually do have my cell phone, I just keep my pocket and it's turned off. As a reminder, when it gets low and I look at it and it's black, stop looking at your phone and enjoy the night, dumbass. Talk to myself here. This week I went to Universal Joint. UJ is what they call it, what the kids call it. Back when Erica Baker was on the show, she said that that was a place that she liked to go, and I'm finally checking it out for the first time. And don't got a lot to say, but I got some important shit to say, so let's get into it. Now, if you don't know where Universal Joint is, it's pretty much right on Georgia. It's right across from Nico Salon, where Erica Baker works, close to the old courthouse, all that. I think that you've at least seen it once, and be like, hey, what's that all about? Because that's what I would think. I was like, oh, this is Universal Joint, what is that? I see people out there. Well, I'm going to tell you what it's about, at least from my perspective, for a Thursday night at the Universal Joint. Which, let me back up for a second, because a year ago, probably, I don't know, a while back, I actually met up with a girl, and actually met while I was working at Southside. It was a Thursday night, too, and she invited me to go to meet her and have a drink at Jefferson's, which is right across the street from Universal Joint, directly right next door to Nico's Salon. Well, when I got there, it was wall-to-wall college kids. Unbelievable. You know, it's a college town, UTC, right there. Totally get it. But I had just never seen so many obvious college kids congregated in one spot in a really long time. And evidently, the hangout that was Jefferson's restaurant on Thursday nights for all the UTC kids moved across the street to UJ, because that's exactly what it was. Now, when I was with that girl at Jefferson's, it was one thing, because I was with her and her sister, and she was with friends, so, you know, it was all right. But me showing up by myself, being easily 10 years older than these kids, and I date younger women from time to time, if the maturity level is on the level, and I hang out with them, I have friends that are in college still, I'm very diversified in that sense. But when you go there by yourself, and you're over 30 years old, you feel like a total creep. Instantly are like, and I'm a person that likes to think that I can go anywhere and get along and have a good time. You know, I went to Allen Gold's, I went to La Pachanga, the Latin Club. I'd like to believe in my head that I can go anywhere and talk to people and enjoy myself. But this was one of those things where just like, damn, you just do not belong here. Jamie, this is not the place for you right now. So it was kind of in my head the whole time because I just felt it. I just felt so freaking old. And I'd like to think I'm a young guy. I know I'm not. I know I'm in my 30s and don't have any kids, never been married. Still got a good chunk of my hair. I still feel like a young guy, except when I was there where I felt like 90 years old. And granted, it wasn't all bad because I was running into different people that I knew from either Southside, because college kids, you know, go to Southside. So there's this one girl that I saw that I used to always give a hard time to when I worked over at Southside Social because I used to work the door. One night I saw my guys carry this little young skinny blonde thing, like four of them, carrying this girl out. And that was the funniest thing, that it took four guys to carry this little girl out. And I thought it was another girl that I had seen. It wasn't. And so this other girl, the girl I saw at UJ, came in the next time. I was like, wait, didn't we just kick you out? I was like, no. And anyway, it's been a long-running joke with me and this girl that threatening to kick her out for causing trouble when it wasn't her. Anyway, Is the joke getting old and kind of stale? I think it's still got a little bit of life in it. But I am notorious for taking a joke and just running it into the ground. It's something that my family is really good at. Where we're still telling jokes that for some reason are still funny to us 30 years later, 20 years later, whatever it was. Still some of the same stupid jokes. Like, yeah, okay, that was 18 years ago. We can get off of it. But we're not. We won't. We will tell the joke until we're dead. And so I have a tendency to do that. But I do think that the joke of me seeing that girl and telling her not to be causing any trouble has got a tiny bit of life into it before she will be like, okay, dude, get some new material. I don't got any new material. Tell the same jokes for 15 years, 20 years, 30 years. Also, an old hostess from Southside Social back in the day. It was good to see her sat down, kind of caught up, see what was going on. Biology major, which, you know, science holds a place in my heart. It's something that I'm interested in, and I had no idea that she was interested in it too. So, good for her, because that's kind of where we need to go. Don't want to get political, but it does seem that our government does not give a damn about science and evidence and facts, really. Which, you know, I've known that for a long time. Both sides of the aisle, people. You could pick your side, but they're both trying to screw you. So, let's just analyze the evidence, listen to the experts, and maybe build our policy and infrastructure on that. Crazy idea, so listen to lying, corrupt politicians. Maybe we listen to experts in fields. I don't know, that seems kind of crazy, right? To listen to someone who knows what they're talking about instead of some corrupt politician. I don't know. Try it, let's see what happens. It's not, I mean, couldn't get any worse, right? Met a couple other dudes playing cornhole. They got cornhole there. I think one of them was about to graduate, but working at Starbucks. Which he wasn't a big fan of Starbucks. I'm not a big fan of Starbucks. Like, if you like the milky, sugary, frappuccino cappuccinos, that's a thing, right? Then, yeah, I mean, they are tasty. Personally, the reason I drink, like, whiskey straight up on the rocks, and I drink my coffee black, is because back when I started getting into fitness, I was trying to cut out extra calories, and all that sugar stuff that you add to your alcoholic beverages and that you add to your caffeine and coffee beverages, you know, that adds up. So I just cut it out, and now that's just how I drink it. I don't need any more calories than I got right now. My midsection shows that. I need to invest in some Spanx or something, I don't know. No, you just diet and exercise, and then you slim down and trim down. And build muscle, which burns calories. You don't need all this other crap. Diet pills and shit. Don't need it. Just eat right, work out, exercise. Anyway, but like I said, this was not an eventful night. All this did was to solidify that I need to be more careful with the bars I go to. Okay, if I were to go with somebody else, at least another friend, even another friend that was my age, it would probably be less weird as me going to this college bar by myself. I can only assume that. And it wasn't like I was like standing out, like, you know, who's, I mean, maybe I was, I don't know. Probably was standing out and like, who's this old guy? Especially when I'm by myself and like, again, don't have someone that I can naturally gravitate toward. So, you know, maybe I gave off a slightly creepy vibe. Tried not to. But, you know, when you're walking around by yourself in a bar, someone very well could get that impression. So I think I came away from this night just thinking, I need to really know what I'm doing and where I'm going. But at the same time, I don't want to get caught up in labels or getting in your own head about you being older than everybody else, because you're going to be. All I can do is be the best 34-year-old that I can be, which means I work out, exercise, try to take care of myself, moisturize, and know that probably 75% of these young, sexy college kids are going to look like total shit when they're my age. And I take great pride in that. I mean, obviously, like, you got a cute young thing looking at me because I got, I don't know, wrinkles on my forehead or whatever the case may be. I just wish we had a side-by-side comparison of what she's going to look like in 10 years. You know? And then maybe the bar is evened up a little bit. Or maybe one of us comes out ahead or whatever. But regardless of your age, regardless of who you are, just be the best you can be. You know, just because you're married and have three kids doesn't mean you just sit on your ass and eat Cheetos. I mean, you know, go for a jog. Do something. Make yourself better. If you're married and you met your husband or you met your wife, you're like, oh, that's a fine piece of ass right there. And so you fall in love, you have great sex, you get married, and then you get complacent. I talk about complacency all the time on this show, where you just say, oh, well, you know, I'm married, I got kids, she's not going anywhere, I'm not going anywhere. Why take care of yourself? Just enjoy yourself. Let's get fat, old, and ugly together. Well, if that's what you want to do, fine, then do it. But that leads to wondering eyes or whatever. I'm not a big fan of marriage. I think I've talked about that. I don't ever see myself getting married. But if I were to get married, there would be in the contract no money, no agreement, just to be doable. Just to stay doable. Do your best to be attractive and sexy for your partner. You owe it to them, for crying out loud. Yeah, I know you got kids and you got soccer practice and all this stuff, but you owe it to your mate to be a sexually viable candidate. So do it. Quit just saying, oh, well, she's going to love me anyway. Yeah, she probably is. But, I mean, wouldn't you rather be tapping some fine piece of ass instead of some grandiose piece of ass? I don't know. Something to think about. So think about it. Anyway, that's pretty much my night. I probably left around 12:30. So let's break it down. My Thursday evening college night at the Universal Joint was pretty much just a long, hard look at my own mortality. Now, I did see some people I knew and had some nice conversations, but ultimately it was just me wondering what the hell I was doing there. Which isn't to say it wasn't a good time, because if you're a young college kid, you absolutely have a good time on Thursday nights over at the Universal Joint. I promise you that, but you probably already know that. You're probably already there, but if you don't, you're welcome. Because there's some fine, sexy co-eds hanging out over there that maybe if I wasn't doing this... Anyway, let's not go there. Anyway, I got a lot to think about. I got a lot on my mind. Got to ponder the mysteries of the universe. But I will give my Thursday night evening at the Universal Joint on Georgia Avenue, 2 nostalgias out of 5. And that concludes another edition of Tales of a Scenic City Loner. Gotta love those grooves. Did you just burp, Pop? What have you been eating? Your own poop again? Anyway, that trip kind of reminded me of something that someone I saw posted on Facebook this week. Essentially, it was a meme, and it says, when you're 28 plus... and you ask people, hey, what's the move tonight? And it's like, bro, what are you doing? Go start a family. But it's as if marriage and a family is like the end-all be-all to a happy or successful life. I don't get that. It is for some people, but it's definitely not a sign of maturity. I would say that majority of people getting married don't have that shit thought out and maybe didn't even plan out to have their kids. But they're there. They're doing it. Maybe they're happy, maybe they aren't. But to me, it's nothing that I'm super interested in. It's not something that I feel like I need to do, because it's not something that I necessarily want to do. That could make me immature in some people's eyes. I definitely don't want to be that 55-year-old guy wearing the Affliction t-shirt and the bedazzled jeans, hanging out at the club, you know, chasing the tail. But at the same time, there's always going to be a market for that, because there's always going to be divorcees, and there's always going to be widows, and no matter how old you are, you can go out and meet people. Now, that might get old for me at some point. Maybe it's getting old for me now. I don't know, but to just assume that because you're 30 and you're not married and don't have a kid or family, that you're doing something wrong in life, I would debate that till the cows come home. Maybe there's some truth to it, though. I don't think so. Anyway, enough of that shit. Let's get on to the interview, which again is old friend of mine, Brandon Kaywood from Brandon Kaywood Photography. I call him Kaywood, always have. And it was really cool to sit down and talk to him because, again, we were really close in high school. After high school, we kind of went our own separate ways. So to get back together and kind of catch up a little bit was really, really great. And so we talked about, like, we were in our first band together, our praise and worship band. We talk about that. We talk about his career and how he got into photography. And we kind of talk about movies and the movie business and the way that works as well. But you'll hear all that stuff. I don't know why I explained it, but I'm just letting you know what to expect. So here we go. Brandon Kaywood. So you bought a house recently, huh?
Semi-recently. I bought it at the bottom of the market, like 2009.
Okay, yeah, that was the time to buy it then.
Yeah,
right?
So I've had it for a while, but it was fine for me, you know, living in by myself. But when the wife came along, she's like, some stuff has got to change. So that's why it seems like the recent purchase, because we've been doing all kinds of remodeling and stuff here.
Yeah, are you happy about those? I'm sure you are.
Yeah, it's one of those things like me being cheap and rather spend my money on like other stuff.
Yeah.
It's like, it's hard to spend money, like big chunks of money at a time, but there are things that once we do it, I'm always like, man, I'm glad we did this.
But that's cool, man. Congratulations on all that.
Thank you.
People probably don't know, but like back in high school, we were like best friends, right?
That's true.
We were like thick as thieves, and then sometime after graduation, we kind of went our own separate ways.
Yeah.
And so honestly, you know, I know a little, you know, I pick up a little bit of what you've been doing and what's been going on with you, but I really don't know, because you were, okay, I think you could probably thank me for this, but, you know, you were in a few rock bands, right?
Yep.
And I probably had a little bit to do with that, right?
Yeah. I think you probably let me play around on your guitars a little bit and realized that I didn't want to play a right-handed guitar. Inspired me to buy my guitar, but I never really got into being like a guitar player.
Right, yeah.
If I did play in a band or I play guitar, it was just some rhythm stuff, but your dog eating his poop.
Yeah, he cleans up after him, so.
Sorry, okay, let me start.
No, it's fine. I might even leave that in there. But yeah, so you got into rock bands, but like when I met you, you were a very different person.
That's true.
And you were into like Casey and JoJo and NSYNC and Backstreet Boys, which, you know, looking back on it, there's worse things, I guess, you know.
I've got a nostalgic boy band playlist on my Spotify that I bust out every now and then.
But at the time, you know, that's what you were listening to, and I kind of came along. It was like, you know, it's a rock thing or whatever, and then you got into different bands. You've been to so many different bands, no?
Yeah.
How did you decide, okay, I'm going to be a rock singer, and this is what, because, you know, you went on, I'm sure you recorded some records and went on some tours, and mm-hmm. How did you decide that that's what you wanted to do?
The whole reason music ever even started, and you'll remember this, is because at church, like, somehow they wanted some youth to put together a youth band, and John McClellan originally was, like, the singer.
Yeah, I do remember that.
And
yeah.
In middle school, I actually played percussion, and so I played a little bit of drums. So we started hanging out, you know, we started going to youth group, and Tom Corals wanted us to put this band together, and John, being the basketball star that he was, like, I think practiced maybe twice with us, and then he's like, I got basketball. So, I was like,
and I think we're all like, yeah, okay.
I was like, I'll sing. I can try to sing, because I wasn't really that good at drums. I would be happy to get away. It's one of those things I knew that at the time I was not that good of a drummer.
Right. You had like one little roll and fill, you know, you had like this one thing that you did. It sounded all right.
So that's kind of started me singing. And apparently Tom works out at the Wellness Center where we work out. And so we see him all the time. And my wife went the other day without me to the gym. Apparently, they got on the subject of me being in the praise band. Apparently, he thought I was a pretty horrible singer back in the day. And so, luckily, he never said it to my face. But
I remember one specific time that we were practicing or doing a song or something. And then I said, hey, Tom, how does that sound? And he goes, rough. But, you know, to be fair, you know, you got to start somewhere, right?
I mean,
we weren't. Led Zeppelin, that's for sure.
You probably haven't told anybody this, but we were 24/7 Lord.
Yeah, I actually came. Sadly, I came up with that name, so yeah, I'll definitely cut that out of the interview. For a while, we were kicking around the name. Was it ACGC
We were typical 15, 16-year-old kids.
Right, no, GCDC, because that was all those praise and worship songs.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
That was the chord pack progression for every song was GCDC.
But anyways, like that, I somehow stumbled upon, I think Sum 41 came around or something like that. Mm-hmm. So I stumbled upon like pop punk and started listening to a little bit more rock here and there. And after high school, started out playing like a pop punk band. So I was in this band called Until This Day. And we had played with this band called rounding third, and then they changed their name to the Silent Escape. So we had played shows with them, and they had decided they had wanted to get rid of their singer. From the time I graduated, I'd wanted to be in a band and like that be what I did. And so this band propositioned me and asked me if I'd be interested in coming and playing with them, and so I did that. And so I moved to Atlanta, was in that band for a couple of years, and we got signed to a little indie label and got to tour all over the country and do a bunch of cool stuff like that.
Yeah, so. Right on. How was the road? Peanut butter sandwiches, showering every couple of days, or was
it was eat what you could get your hands on or people would give you for free, try to make enough money to put in the gas tank to get to the next place, sleep in parking lots and a bus. We converted like a church bus. We like ripped out most of the seats and then put like a little platform in the back to put a futon mattress on. Most people, it sounds like the worst possible scenario whatsoever, but like I loved it. Everything about it was fun. You know, we would go out for 2 or 3 weeks and come home for a month or two and then save up money and try to book shows and go out again. So
like when you're young and you don't have debt, like
exactly.
It's probably like the best thing you can do, right?
I mean, it was just in just the social aspect of meeting people every night and, you know, new people. And back then, MySpace was all the rage.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
You know, meeting people that you knew on MySpace. And even now, I bet it's even, like, everything is even more integrated now. So I can't even imagine, like, social, you know, media and stuff, how it has helped bands. And then I think maybe even oversaturated a lot of it, too. So it's kind of, it's easier to get your music to people, but there's so much, it's so easy that there's so much of it that.
Yeah, and maybe, or maybe not, the cream rises to the top, right. So it kind of evens itself out. But you know me, I used to be all about knowing bands and knowing albums and knowing music,
right.
And I don't give a shit anymore. Like I still like music, but I to try and keep up and try to be now when I can organically discover a new band and be like, oh man, shit, because especially, you know, we're in our 30s, it's harder to impress us,
right.
It's always been kind of hard to impress me, right?
But,
but it's harder to impress us now, so when I actually hear a new band, I'm just like, wow, that's cool, it means more to me now,
right? What's cool, I think Spotify, like I love Spotify. I haven't bought an album. If I really love a band, I might buy their album. Spotify, I guess, I don't know how new it is, I didn't even realize it was doing it until it did it, but they have a new feature where you'll listen to a playlist or an album, and if you just let it keep playing, it'll find like what it thinks is similar.
Mm-hmm.
And I found some bands I probably would have never heard of, you know.
Yeah, yeah, same here. Yeah, very, very cool. How long did you do that for? How long did you do the music thing for?
About 24, 25. 2007 is when that band ended. I've done little musical projects. I actually got a pretty cool musical project that I'm working on right now. I haven't done anything in 6, 7 years musically, so.
Was that when you got into photography? Because that took me. I knew you so well, and
right.
Photography was never, ever anything that you talked about or seemed interested in or anything like that.
Photography was not even on my radar. Played music for a while. You know, you get to a point where either you're going to keep doing it, and that's going to be your life, or you realize I've got to grow up, and you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I started working for my dad full-time, and music slowly faded out. I didn't really have a creative outlet. Like, music had been my identity for so long.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of went through a little period of, like, I don't know, I just didn't have that creative outlet that I had previously had for the last 10 years or whatever. And I just happened to go buy a camera at, like, Walmart at, like, 1 o'clock in the morning, like, an impulse trip to Walmart. And I think I bought, like, a Nikon, some little, like, one of the ones they have in stock at Walmart, a little DSLR. And got it home and, like, realized that this thing is pretty complicated. I mean, you can put it on automatic and it's like having a point and shoot. So I tried to start looking at the manual and I got about 2 pages in. Oh, I can't do this. So I started looking on YouTube. I would have an idea. I want to learn how to do something. And I would look up a tutorial and kind of learn. I've always been kind of visual, which has helped me. That always helped me in guitar because I'm left-handed. Watching anybody was like a mirror. That was always pretty cool.
Right.
And so I've always been a real visual learner, and I kind of pick up stuff quick. And so I started just playing with the camera, and at some point, somebody wanted to pay me to do something. And so I slowly dabbled in it, tried out some different stuff. I did the typical, you know, senior pictures and weddings and all that stuff that you think a photography business is supposed to to do, especially like in this area, you know what I mean?
The guy who always, you know who I'm talking about, the guy who always
who shouldn't say his name.
Yeah, yeah, indeed. But that guy, that
was
at every football game and every dance and all that stuff,
Yeah, so everybody that I had known, you remember Aaron Thomason?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So he had a photography business that was doing pretty well. And so he was kind of one person I knew that kind of I'd seen somebody be successful. So I kind of thought maybe that's what I need to do. And then throughout the process of getting into photography, I discovered some photographers that I really liked. I've always loved looking at like movie posters and and things like that. And I found this photographer named Dave Hill, who's like really popular for something called compositing, which is basically where you're taking multiple images mm-hmm. and, you know, I guess that's what any kind of compositing it is, blending, you know, multiple things together. So I discovered him and really kind of was like, this is cool. Everything I've learned photography-wise has been YouTube, and I tell people I went to the college of YouTube. So I probably spent as much time, if not more, watching videos and reading articles and things like that.
Yeah, YouTube is great. I went to art school, and one of the coolest things, I got like I guess it was like $200 or $300. I mean, like a 5-megapixel digital camera, you know? And I was able to, because I knew Photoshop, I was able to like make it look like something. But one project was like to make a B-movie poster. And that was the coolest thing. I was like, oh, this is so cool. And I actually thought that, oh, I could do this. But I didn't. It's what you call compositing. I call photo art. It's right. Just, but compositing sounds way more professional. But that's all right. But that's cool that you were able to get in that. I was never able to, so I guess this is a personal question, or something I'm curious about personally. Lighting. I've never been able to wrap my brain around lighting and getting that look and getting, you know, making people not look fuzzy and blurry and
right.
or blown out or whatever. Because that, to me, that seems like the hardest part.
You know, there's a lot of photographers out there. Photographers who are, like, good at lighting
mm-hmm.
will say that they're natural light photographers. Mm-hmm. That they say, yeah, you know, I use natural light. A lot of times that's because they're intimidated by using strobes. You know, they don't really know how to do it or haven't taken the time. But I knew the style that I wanted to, like, eventually get to, mm-hmm. the style that I shoot now. But just by watching photographers and watching tutorials, I knew that, like, lighting was extremely important. I can't create the type of pictures that I do without lighting. Because a lot of times I'm using at least, you know, 3 lights. And I'm doing a lot of cross lighting and stuff. Mm-hmm. So I get, you know, rim lighting and all that kind of stuff. So it's one of those things, like, it was really hard at first. I bought a couple of, you know, speed lights and couldn't understand why my pictures... I couldn't get them to look certain ways, and then just learning about shutter speed, learning like limitations of the camera and stuff like that, learning how to manipulate light, and learning that, you know, sometimes the speed light isn't powerful enough to, you know, overpower the sun and stuff, and, you know, investing in better lighting. And eventually, there was just a point where it like clicked. I tell everybody one of the main things for photography to really focus on and really try to like grasp is learning like your aperture, shutter speed, and like ISO, which are kind of your 3 big things. And once you can fully grasp how all those work and how you can change one or the other to manipulate your environment, whatever, everything else will kind of...
Right on. But I don't see a lot of, I mean, other than commercial stuff, I don't see a lot of photographers doing what you're doing. Like, I know you got some notoriety a few years ago when you did that, what was it? Not all heroes wear capes. So did that kind of change things for you? Like,
that was a changing point. At the time, I had gotten a job. Strangely enough, we are in Dalton. I was working at a rug company, and I was a videographer at a rug company. Like, the only rug company that I knew that like had an on-staff videographer. So I don't know. It was weird. But I'd been working on this project, and I wanted to get into commercial photography, and I wanted to be able to sell composites because there's kind of a specialty type thing. Mm-hmm. Like, I make a lot more off of a composite right, yeah. than I would, you know, just a regular image. But at the time before that project, I'd done like maybe a couple of simple little composites, like where the idea came from. I wanted to do it was like all local law enforcement and first responders. And I did it as kind of a local project. People wanted to interview me from, like, you know, different blogs, and then a couple of magazines wanted to do stories about it. And then I would see blog posts in like different languages like pop up and stuff like that. Yahoo flew me and my wife, she was my fiance at the time, they flew us to New York to do a thing for Flickr. Like, they used to do this thing called the Weekly Flickr.
Okay.
So that was cool. Through that, I knew I wanted to do commercial photography, but like I had never even thought about the tactical industry. But like this company called TruSpec from Atlanta, the Georgia State Patrol picture that I did, they were wearing TruSpec clothes, and so TruSpec saw it and contacted me, and I ended up became one of my first big clients. Another company in Texas, one of their clients was the Tunnel Hill Police Department, and they saw one of the pictures, and now they're one of my clients. I do like work for them almost every year, and so it was kind of a kickstart to what I do now, and it's kind of just grew from there, and eventually I started making more on the side than I was making at my job, and that's when I decided it's time to go full time with it.
Yeah, was that scary? Like, obviously, it's all up to you. So when you went to start your own company or your own business, that had to be.
It was scary. The place I was working at, though, I had a good salary and it was a good paying job, and I was able to save, and so I saved up about a half year's pay to be safe. Like I put back, you know, a lot, and me and my wife, we were talking about it. We were getting married in June. And 2 weeks before our wedding, she's like, because we were talking about maybe the end of the year. Or she's like, well, you just go ahead and do it now. So she trusted me enough. So she had just graduated, so she had no job. And so I quit my job. So neither one of us had a job. But we had enough money in the bank. We had to use it. It ended up working out. And I ended up, you know, I've had 3 good years so far. So
that's awesome, man. Seriously, congratulations on all that. That's got to be nice.
Yeah, it is a lot of pressure. And like, the hardest thing is you'll be really, really busy. Then you'll have a dry spell. It seems like every year, December hits, I guess everybody spends the rest of the money they have in the budget for the year. And January hits, and then there's just like crickets for sometimes it's a month or two. And that's when you start getting kind of nervous. You're like, and then slowly but surely, so far, things have picked up.
You know, being an artist, myself, like it's hard to budget.
Right.
When you don't know, you know, what you're going to do or how many clients you're going to have. So it's got to be frustrating, right?
Yeah. I've become an extreme saver. We've got enough money in our savings and in my business account. And we purposely put that back just in case, you know, we have money that we're not going to touch. And I don't have a whole lot of debt. I just kind of have the house. But like I said, I got it. The bottom of the market. So I have a really low house payment. So that's good. And then keep as little debt as possible. We don't have any credit cards or anything like that. And so... And my wife, she's a teacher. We could honestly, like house and bills and all that, we could honestly have lived off her income if we had to. So a lot of my income, I'm able to just save and stuff like that.
And spend on Back to the Future
stuff. Yeah, I have a slight obsession with Back to the Future.
Yeah, I mean, I think everyone liked that movie, but I didn't know how obsessed you were about it.
I've always liked Back to the Future. I always loved Back to the Future, too, when I was younger. I think everybody... Because of the hoverboard.
Yeah, totally.
But now that I kind of understand story and stuff like that, like, the first one's the best one. And actually, I kind of like the third one better than the second one.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the second one's good.
I do like the third one.
The second one's good. It's just like, it seems like they were trying to just really build off the first one. Mm. All the funny things, all the good things they did in the first one, they tried to kind of bring them back in some sort of way. And they did that in the third one, too, but I kind of like the story of the Wild West and stuff. But I knew that Back to the Future Day was coming in 2015. And Whitney had never really watched them all. Kind of like the Blu-ray set on eBay and ordered it. So we watched them, but they had all this behind-the-scenes stuff on that DVD. And I don't know, I just got sucked into, I learned how they had another guy playing Marty originally.
Yeah, his name is, it's the drug dealer from Pulp Fiction.
Yeah.
God, what's his name? I know Scott is, listening to this and just yelling at the...
I can tell you, if I weren't trying to think of his name...
Schultz, maybe?
Yeah, Schultz, So all this fascinating stuff, how it all came together. Teen Wolf was my favorite movie growing up, so I've always been a huge Michael J. Fox fan, and so hearing about all this stuff in that interview, he kind of makes fun of Teen Wolf. He regrets doing it. I was like, what?
Everyone wanted to surf on a truck.
Yeah.
After that movie.
But I don't know, I just kind of got into it, and then I started, you know, collecting things here and there, and we got this vast amount of knowledge about Back to the Future. I've listened to Audible books about it. I have this weird obsession with it.
Yeah, but you've always kind of been that way, though. You'll grab onto something and kind of go with it, because I was able to kind of follow you through your creative processes through high school, and I always kind of saw you being inspired. That's the thing. You were always inspired by something, and that kind of led you to do your own thing.
Right.
So what inspires you now?
I used to never read. Do you remember Mr. Thomas in
12th
grade?
Yeah.
Literature or whatever. I remember telling him that I had made it through high school without reading one book. And he's like, Mr. Kayla, I don't think that's something to be proud of. But to me, it was. I passed all these classes, graduated A's and B's, and never read a book in high school. But I started out listening to books. I saw The Maze Runner in theaters, and I really liked the movie. So I started listening to the Maze Runner series. Really cool. I got really into that. I actually got to meet James Dashner, the author of that, and so that was pretty cool.
How'd you do that?
He came to the Barnes & Noble, and it was somewhere in Georgia. He was doing a little tour for one of his new books that came out, and so got to meet him, got him to sign a book. So I've gotten into, and then I transitioned into, instead of just listening to him, reading books. And so the photography that I really love that I get to do is when I get to do something cool and creative and almost try to tell some sort of visual story. So I watch a lot of movies, and I, you know, now that really visual advertisement and marketing is kind of my thing, I watch movies differently. I'm enjoying the movie, but I'm also looking at the lighting and looking at the angles and the shots and trying to draw inspiration, you know. Could I use this either for a client or a personal project or something like that. So
yeah, I've worked on a few movies and TV shows, and you watch it, you look at it differently when you're a part of it. You see how it's done and just so much. Because when you watch a movie, you think that maybe they got a couple of cameras or, you know, there's just some guy that's just like jumping around, you know, not knowing that every single time that picture change, that frame changes, is about an hour or 2 to 3 hours of work.
Yeah, different takes.
Yeah.
Different takes.
Just to get a different angle.
Right.
Because
when a movie, they're shooting that one angle of that scene.
Yeah.
Because the director's watching that one camera and every shot. That's why a movie takes 6 months to a year to a big budget movie to film, you know?
Yeah, for sure. And then every time the camera changes, the lighting has to change, the sound has to change.
That's one of the things I notice now a lot, because movies will backlight somebody that's talking, but then they'll do conversational shots where, like, you saw that the back of that person's shoulder was super bright, so there had to be a light coming from somewhere. Then they'll show the reverse of it, and there's no light hitting it. So that kind of stuff, like, drives me crazy.
Indeed. Or like when they film like street scenes, they always like wet down the pavement.
Yeah. At night, especially at night.
Yeah, so it sparkles.
Mm-hmm. So it gives it some depth and stuff.
Yeah, so all that crazy stuff that
which they do in Back to the Future. in the parking lot.
And it's so crazy because you don't even know. Most people probably wouldn't even notice that. But to do that, like, they bring this big truck and they just hose all the shit down. And just like, God, how much money did they pay for that water truck to come and just wet the pavement? You know, it's...
I mean, how much big budget movies? I've always been. I would love to see like the budget for like catering, like the food and stuff. It's gotta
be ridiculous because, you know, again, I've worked on TV shows, and so you know, you get like at least 2 catered meals a day, breakfast and lunch typically. But then you also have to have a hot meal like every 2 hours. So you'll have breakfast, you'll sit down for that, you'll have lunch, you'll take a lunch break. But in between that, you have the craft service people come in and like, hey, do you want some chicken wings or you know, would you like some burrito? And not only that, but they have the craft service table with your carrots and your candy and
they're feeding extras and stuff too. It's not like
sometimes yes. If it's a big scene, like say it's a scene like a basketball game, and you've got 500 extras, right? Those people were probably eating nuts and apples and drinking water.
Right.
But if you're like an extra and maybe you're like 1 of 4 or 1 of 10, then maybe we'll be like, okay, we'll give them, you know, we'll give them some of the chicken wings or something like that. So it really makes a difference.
So all the good food and good catering is going to crew and actors.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
I'm sure most of those actors, depending on who they are, aren't eating a whole lot anyway, especially depending on what their role is and how much training they've had to go through to be as skinny and muscular.
Yeah, it's really hard not to eat all that, just shove your face. Especially if, like, I did a lot of stand-in work, so, like, while the actual actor that I was standing in for was doing his thing, I was just kind of standing around at craft service just shoving my face. Dude, I gained a lot of weight doing that stuff. So. Which, speaking of, you're significantly thinner than you were in high school.
I think that was kind of another result originally to playing music.
Mm-hmm.
I was a pretty big guy. I wasn't huge in high school. I was, you know, 200s-ish.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd gotten up to like 240 pounds. And playing music, my mom filmed everything. She used to bring her camera. If I did anything that was remotely, you know, something she could watch later, she would film it. So playing shows and watching myself, I knew I didn't look like what I needed to look like to be a front man.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of just inspired me to lose weight. And so probably when I was about 20, I just made the decision to really buckle down and lose weight. So I've kind of, you know, I've yo-yoed. It's hard when you grow up kind of heavy and then you lose a lot of weight.
Mm-hmm.
So I've kind of had to watch and just kind of live a healthy lifestyle. And I lost about 30 pounds about a year ago that I'd, you know, slowly... marriage weight, I needed to get back down. So there's things that I think I notice it because I've had such a dramatic change. I try to keep it in check as much as I can.
Yeah, me too. And it gets hard. It's funny because like you start losing weight around 20. I start gaining weight around 20. That's when I start working out and stuff because I'm just like all of a sudden your clothes on, just like, what the hell, you know?
It was pretty cool for a while when I was like, you know, I was a heavy guy in school. And then, you know, that 5 to 10 year period after school, I slimmed down. So I actually was probably, it felt like I was more attractive post-high school versus high school. But then you see all those, like, you know, dudes who are super attractive in high school, and you'll see them, and they're got their beer guts.
Yeah, indeed. All through high school, when I graduated, I was 145 pounds. 145 pounds. I think I'm like 205 right now. I'd like to be about 280, or no, 290 is fine.
290 or 190?
190, sorry. No, 290. No. Because I don't do security anymore, so I don't have to worry about it. That's a nice thing, too. I don't have to worry about, you know, being the baddest mother in the room. It's a lot of pressure, for sure. But yeah, congratulations on that, because it's hard, and it's harder as you get older, it too. So the fact, I never thought I'd be over 200 pounds, ever. So the fact that I am is just like, I think that. Most I've been like 230s.
Well, I got into running a couple of years ago. Well, running and biking, like crazy. My sister, my dad, and my stepmom all got really into running. I never really did it, and then I wanted to do this like a sprint triathlon. They do swims 300 meters, and you bike 12 miles, and then run 2 miles. So I kind of trained for that. Last year, I actually did a half marathon. I never ever thought that I would enjoy running. I always hated running.
Yeah, I still do.
And I started training for that half marathon. Once I got to the point to where like running 4 or 5 miles was easy, like running became fun. Like I could,
right.
That was pretty, yeah. It was cool to like go somewhere that was really nice and just run with cool scenery and listen to music. And
but it does, you make it sound real nice though, I gotta say. But seriously, dude, thank you so much for coming.
It was good talking to you.
Thank you. All right, Brandon Kaywood. That was fun, man. That was good talking to him. Hopefully you enjoyed it too. All you aspiring photographers, maybe he gave you some hope for something to aspire to reach towards, a goal to grab, and maybe some insight on how to do it. I don't know. It was just cool talking to him. Old friend, really awesome catching up because it's been a lot of years. It really has. But by popular demand, I'm going to see what we got with voicemails. I know I haven't played them in a couple of weeks. I apologize. I didn't realize y'all liked them so much. I liked them, but I never got the vibe until it's like, hey, where are the voicemails? Well, here we go. But here's the thing, though. If you call in to the show, I have more voicemails. No one calls in, only a couple of drunk friends of mine and some people every once in a while. So, you know, if you got something to say, if there's something you like about the show or don't like about the show, call in. Let me know about it. And we'll do it. Y'all like the voicemails, so we're doing the voicemails. I like them too. I'm glad you do. And if you want the number of the show, I don't have it off the top of my head. It's hard to remember. But if you go to my Facebook page, it's definitely on there, which is facebook.com/CHA podcast, or just type in Coming Home Alone podcast on Facebook. Also, like the Facebook page, because the likes on the Facebook page do not match the downloads, evidently. So that's a great way to support the show, just to go to Facebook and click and be my friend, and then you get all the updates and all the stupid memes I post and all that stuff. So, facebook.com/CHA podcast or Coming Home Alone podcast on Facebook. Like that sucker. Get the notifications. I'm also on Instagram as well. My name is just Jamie North. J-E-M-E-Y North. Follow me on Instagram. I post stuff from time to time on that. Bitcher's a pup. And different bullshit. So, obviously, you want to be privy to that. I know you do. But anyway, let's look at the voicemail.
Hey, this is Mr. Powerade. That's my name.
Yeah, it sounds legit.
Hey, long-time listener. First-time caller.
Obviously, yeah.
Yeah. Just got two questions for you. You ever stared into the middle distance of eternity and wondered why?
Sure, all the time.
Also, have you ever been to Riverbend? And if so, what's your... And, you know, Riverbend can be a mixed bag.
Yeah, that's right.
Usually bad. But what's your favorite Riverbend experience, and what's your worst Riverbend experience, since you're a Chattanooga-ophile? J. Just curious. Long time listener, third time caller. This is Mr. Powerade.
Right.
Last name, Zero.
Mr. Powerade Zero. Gotcha. Hey, thanks for the question. The thing about the abyss of eternity or whatever. Maybe? I don't know, sleepwalk sometimes. But Riverbend, yeah. You know, I'm not a huge fan of Riverbend. I never have been. I've been to a lot of festivals, and it's definitely on the bottom end of festivals. It's just the stage is so far away, and the audience doesn't seem to be so engaged. I don't really like festivals because, like, I like to go to a show, and the people that are at that show are there to adamantly see that band. And when you go to a festival, you know, some people don't give a shit about the band that's playing. Some do, some don't. Most don't. Because maybe they're there to see someone else. Worst experience was probably Michelle Branch. Like, I haven't been in at least 15 years, 10, 15 years to Riverbend. So Michelle Branch was probably the worst I've ever seen. And LL Cool J was cool. I saw LL Cool J once at Riverbend, and that was pretty cool. That was back when that Get Your Head Sprung song just came out. So yeah, that's probably the answer to that question. Thank you. Riverbend. Alright, let's see what else we got.
Thought I'd call in and maybe give you some little sound bites. Here we go.
Alright.
First one.
Sweet.
2 minute warning.
All right.
Ow.
Sure, yeah.
She's got a smell like sandpaper.
Yeah, okay.
I've tasted that before.
Definitely been there, for sure.
You need Preparation H.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It smells like someone shaved my back.
Alright, that's a little out there, but maybe.
Tiny fingers for your happy day.
Yeah, alright. I like the grooves on that one for sure. What else we got? Anything else?
So lazy tired.
Okay, so lazy tired. Gotcha. Hey, thank you for that. Those are awesome. I'm definitely going to use that Preparation H one. For sure. Hey, I appreciate the effort put in. Maybe I'll use those. Maybe, honestly, like, he's just, like, screwing around, but maybe I'll actually use one of those to, and I'll bleep out a F-word or something like that. So, yeah, man, thank you for those. That's pretty awesome. Anyway, with that, I think we're going to call it a night. Pop! 9 episodes down. Feeling fine. Alright, I want to thank Brandon K. Wood for coming in, talking to me, and obviously all the callers with the voicemails. So we'll see you next time for episode number 10. But until then, yeah, we'll see you around.